Well, hello and welcome to our Wednesday morning Bible study. Today we are continuing our narrative about David in his flight from Saul. And this morning we are in 1 Samuel chapter 27. 1 Samuel chapter 27. So if you have your Bibles or your device or whatever it is you happen to be reading the scriptures from, go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 26. And let's go ahead and read the text. And then when you're done reading the text, we're going to dive right in. Okay, so this is another one of these places where we have a tendency to think second verse same as the first, where we have this, the David is sparing Saul's life again. One more time, David has put himself in a position where he could kill Saul, and yet he refrains his hand. He stops himself. He prevents himself from harming Saul because, not because Saul was good, but because Saul was the Lord's anointed. We have the second event where this has happened, and so we have this narrative, and it's this narrative that keeps repeating where David continues to have it in his power to harm Saul, and he continues to not harm Saul. It's repeated, and it's repeated for a reason. But this morning, let's go ahead, and we're just going to dive right into the text. We know the who, where, and when of this, right? We've been following this text fairly closely, so we kind of have a basic idea. If you don't know where we are, you know, you need to start a week or so ago when we started the David sojourning in the wilderness. But we should be pretty well kept up. Okay, so we're gonna move through the text verse by verse today, and then hopefully we're gonna do a little bit different. This is gonna be more of a sermonic exposition rather than, you know, the five W's that I normally do. But I hope that this will be useful. Okay, so again, and I'm paraphrasing a lot of this here. Again, verse one, the Ziphites come and they say, "Look, David is hiding in such and such a place." Saul gets up then and goes to that place, along with 3,000 select men of Israel, to look for David in the desert of Ziph. Okay, so again, David has about 600 men with him. Saul goes with 3,000. Again, we talked about this, how mountain warfare is really, really gives an advantage to the defender. You know, and a small select unit of men can really hold off a much larger force in the mountains. So Saul comes with a large contingent of men, but they were select men. Saul is choosing the best soldiers. Now, again, this sounds shockingly familiar to something that we've already heard. Okay, so when Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, they told him that David is in the desert of En Gedi. So Saul and 3,000, this is verse chapter 24, verse 1, 3,000 select men from all Israel went to find David in the region of the rocks of the mountain goats. Now, why were they looking in this place? Why were they looking here? Well, if you go backwards here, and you'll find that what happened. David is eluding Saul. Let's go to chapter 23. Okay, so David has delivered the city of Keilah from the hands of the Philistines, and he is hole up in the city of Keilah. But then what happens? David stayed in the strongholds. Verse 15, 23, 15, David realized that Saul had come to seek his life, and at that time David was in Horesh in the desert of Ziph. Okay, so then he meets with Jonathan, and then in verse 19, chapter 23, verse 19, we read, "Then the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah and said, 'Isn't David hiding among us at the strongholds of Horesh in the hill of Hakilah, south of Jeshimon? Now, at your own discretion, O king, come down, delivering him into the king's hand will be our responsibility.'" And Saul was very happy because somebody actually cared about him, okay? So 23:19, the Ziphites come. The people of Ziph come of their own volition. They come to Saul and they say, "Hey, David is hiding in the strongholds, the caves, the mountain fortresses of Horesh at the hill of Hakilah, south of Jeshimon." Okay, now let's scroll forward to chapter 26. And what do we see? The Ziphites again come to Saul and say, "Hey, David is hiding in Hakilah near Jeshimon." So David keeps going back to the same place. Why? Because it's a very defensible position. That's why he's going there. So Saul camps by the road, 26 verse 3, Saul camps by the road of Hakilah near Jeshimon, but David was staying in the desert. And when he realized Saul had come to the desert to find him, David sent scouts and verified that Saul had indeed arrived. Okay, so again, we see that David is a knowledgeable commander. He doesn't just do nothing. We always see that, you know, with Saul, people are always, you know, coming to Saul, and Saul's kind of making demands, but David is taking proactive action. And maybe I'm forcing that issue a little bit, but I think that's probably a fair assessment. So David set out and went to the place where Saul was camped. David saw the place where Saul and Abner, son of Ner, the general in command of his army, were sleeping. Now Saul was lying in the entrenchment, and the army was camped all around him. David said to Ahimelech the Hittite and Abishai, son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, "Who will go down to meet me with me to Saul in the camp?" Abishai replies, "I will go down with you." Okay, so what we have here is we have an introduction of a couple characters here. The sons of Zeruiah, you can kind of pronounce it however you want, but these are, Zeruiah is supposed to be either David's aunt or David's sister. I think I've heard people argue it both ways, but Joab and his brothers, there are three brothers, the sons of Zeruiah, Joab, Abishai, and I forget the third one, Asahel, the three brothers, the sons of Zeruiah, they are really important in the narratives of David, especially later. These are some of David's, like, either nephews or cousins. It's hard to say exactly who they are, but they are very warlike. They are fiercely devoted to David, but they are also fiercely devoted to their own positions in the army. So watch these guys. These guys are very important. And what we see is Abishai is fearless. He says, "I'll go into the camp with you." And so David and Abishai approached the army at night and found Saul lying asleep in the entrenchment with his spear stuck in the ground by his head. Abner and the army were lying all around him, and Abishai said to David, "Today God has delivered your enemy into your hands. Now let me drive the spear right through him into the ground with one swift jab. A second jab won't be necessary." I think the NIV is a little more poetic there. I think the NIV says, you know, I won't strike twice, or I won't need to strike twice. But David says, "Don't kill him, you know. Who can reach out against the Lord's anointed and not have guilt?" And David goes on to say, you know, as long as Yahweh lives, Yahweh himself will strike him down. Either his day will come and he'll die, or he'll go into battle and will be swept away. But may the Lord prevent me from extending my hand against the Lord's chosen one. Now, take the spear by Saul's head and the jug of water and let's get out of here. Okay, so David is doing a couple things. First of all, David is refusing to touch the Lord's anointed. Okay, Yahweh, through Samuel, anointed Saul to be king. And David says, "I am not going to strike a king." Now, this is godly behavior. Also, this is just smart behavior. If you're going to be the next king, you don't want to set a precedent that it's okay to kill kings, right? Like, if you're a king, you need to kind of enforce that taboo that killing kings is just an unthinkable thing, that he is the Lord's anointed, and you cannot strike down the Lord's anointed without being guilty. Okay, so they take Saul's water, and they take his spear, and they run away. And no one saw them, because why? Because God, the Lord, put a deep sleep upon the soldiers. So David crosses over to the other side of the road, and he goes up on top of a hill quite a ways away, and David calls out to the army, to Abner, not to Saul, but he calls out to Abner, and he said, "Hey, Abner, you know, won't you answer, Abner?" And then he says, "Who are you?" And Abner replies, "You know, who is this? And who's called to the king?" Well, he didn't call the king. He called you, Abner, you know, but Abner knows what's up. They're trying to get the attention of the king. And David said, "You know, aren't you a man? And after all, who is like you in Israel? You know, why then haven't you been able to protect the Lord, your king? One of the soldiers came to kill your king, the Lord, your Lord, the king. And this failure on your part isn't good. As surely as the Lord lives, you people who have not protected your Lord, the Lord's chosen one, are as good as dead. Now look where the king's spear and the jug of water that was by his head are." So what David is saying is he has respect for Abner. And look at what he says. "Who is like you in Israel?" I mean, Abner was one of the greatest warriors in the nation. He was also a relative. He's a close relative of Saul. And remember, Saul was a head taller than anybody in Israel when he was anointed king, okay? Abner, who's his family, is also likely to be a very large person, and he's a commander-in-chief of his armies, so Abner is a pretty important person there. And of course, David knows Abner, right? Like, I'm sure they fought in battles before. David used to be the one who led the military campaigns. Now it's Abner, it seems. And so he calls out to Abner. He said, you know, who is a man like you in Israel, not only in stature and in bravery, but who has leadership, who has a position of authority. And he said, you know, you've done wrong. You should have protected the king. Now, of course, Saul recognizes David's voice and he says, is that your voice, David, my son? And David says, yes, it is my lord, the king. And he said, why is my lord chasing his servant? What have I done? What wrong have I done? So let my lord the king listen to the words of his servant. If the Lord has incited you against me. Now listen to David's words. These are really important. If the Lord has incited you against me, may he take delight in an offering. But if men have instigated this, may they be cursed before the Lord. For they have driven me away this day from being united with the Lord's inheritance, saying, go on, serve other gods. Now don't let my blood fall to the ground away from the Lord's presence. For the king of Israel has gone out to look for a flea the way one looks for a partridge in the hill country. So again, this should sound familiar. David says, look, if I've sinned against God and this is my punishment, then may God be pleased with the sacrifice. But if men have done this, if men have incited you against me, then may God deal with them. And so Saul replies. Saul says, I've sinned. Come back, my son David. I won't harm you, for you treated my life with value this day. I've behaved foolishly and I made a very terrible mistake. And David replied, here is the king's spear. Let one of your servants come over and get it. The Lord rewards each man for his integrity and loyalty. Even though today the Lord delivered you into my hand, I was not willing to extend my hand against the Lord's chosen one. In the same way that I valued your life this day, may the Lord value my life and deliver me from all danger. Saul replied to David, may you be rewarded, my son David. You will without question be successful. So David went on his way and Saul returned to his place. This is a really interesting passage. And I think that if we had more time, what would be probably my goal would be to do a comparison between the two times where Saul, where his life is spared. I think that would be really useful, but we don't really have the time for that. What I want us to notice, what I think is significant, is look at David's response and look at what David, both of David's responses. First of all, David is willing to accept that maybe he's done something wrong. David is willing to accept that maybe he's done something wrong, that maybe the reason that Saul is pursuing him is not just because Saul's a jerk, but because the Lord has incited Saul against David. David's willing to accept that as a possibility. I don't know that David believes it, but he's willing to accept that that's possible. And he said, David says, look, if this is somehow my fault and I'm unaware of it, because it is possible to sin, it is possible to sin without being aware of it. If I've done this, then may the Lord be happy with a sacrifice. But if men have instigated this, may they be cursed before the Lord. Now look at what David doesn't say. What David doesn't say is, if the Lord has done this, may he accept a sacrifice. But if this is from men, may you deal with this. He's focusing his attention on the Lord and the Lord's response. What he says, these conditions upon which he is being driven away, he sets the conditions based upon the response of the Lord. Because and he says, may they be cursed before the Lord, for they have tried to curse me. That's what he's saying. They have tried to curse me, so I'm going to ask if this is from men, that may God curse them. They've tried to drive me away from their inheritance of the Lord. May they lose their inheritance in the Lord. And he says to Saul, now don't let my blood fall to the ground away from the Lord's presence. For the king of Israel has gone out to look for a flea, the way one looks for a partridge in the hill country. And David says, look, I'm not important. You're the king. I'm just a servant of the king. Why are you spending all of this energy looking for me, just a servant of the king? What is this all about? And of course, Saul recognizes his error, as he normally does. He realizes that what he's done was sinful and wicked. And he says, you know, come back, please come back. He calls him my son. And David's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Okay. He says, here's your spear. Here's the king's spear. You can send one of your young men to come get it. And then look at verse 23. The Lord rewards each man for his integrity and loyalty. Now, again, this is very parallel to what we see back in chapter 23, where, you know, David says, you know, from evil hearts come evil deeds, or from evil hands come evil deeds. Something quite to that effect. Depends on kind of how you want to translate that. But he's saying, basically, David says, look, evil men do evil things. Here he says, the Lord rewards each man for his integrity and loyalty. What he's saying is, it's basically a very soft way of saying, you know, may the Lord judge between you and me. May the Lord determine who is right and who is wrong. And he says, even though this day the Lord delivered you into my hand, I was not willing to extend my hand against the Lord's chosen one. Now, what is he saying? He delivered you into my hand, but I was not willing to extend my hand against the Lord's chosen one. David is saying, he's not saying, I didn't harm you, King Saul, because you're a king. I didn't fail to harm you because you're my father-in-law. I didn't fail to harm you because you're the father of my best friend. I didn't fail to harm you because I'm loyal to you. I chose not to harm you because you are the Lord's chosen one. Saul deserved to have his life taken, but because he was Yahweh's chosen, David would not do it. And then look at what he says. In the same way that I valued your life this day, what would we expect? We would expect David to say, look, because I valued your life this day, you should value my life. But he doesn't. He says, may the Lord value my life and deliver me from all danger. David is not hoping to sway Saul here. What he is doing is he is proclaiming his vindication before everybody within earshot. He is saying, I came, I had the power to harm you, and I chose not to. This is evidence. This is the second time now I've proven that I am not here to harm you. That is not my goal. I'm not here to just destroy your life. I valued your life because you were the Lord's anointed, and I'm asking the Lord to value my life. I want Yahweh to value my life. David's focus the entire time is on what the Lord has said, what the Lord will do. He is not concerned about human efforts, human errors, human striving. He is concerned about the Lord and what the Lord will do. And that's a good focus for us. Our focus should not be on tit for tat with humans, with people, but on pleasing the Lord and doing that which is pleasing to him. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this morning Bible study. I can't wait to join you this evening for our evening Bible study and tomorrow and Friday as we continue to move through the Bible. Thank you. God bless.